Announcement before we begin, we have a thank you card here for Makarios Bible Church. The flowers you sent for our mother were beautiful. This kind expression of sympathy is gratefully acknowledged and deeply appreciated, the family of Mildred Morris. And on a personal note, it was quite an encouragement to me. I'm not a big flower guy, but in a difficult time, it was ironic, and I don't know how you guys did it, but they had delivered those flowers on a Sunday, and they were the first ones to show up. So it was something special for me personally, and I'm sure Linda as well. So we appreciate the application and the thoughtfulness. All right, let's make sure you are in fellowship and continue on here with the issue of false systems of doctrine, which, again, unfortunately, are all too often propagated by those men who at one time were faithful to the truth and who have taken deviations for various reasons, whatever their reasoning was, and have walked away from the faith and embraced all sorts of nonsense in some cases, varying degrees of nonsense. It's one thing, again, to walk away and go back to being a basic fundy, I suppose, although that is one of the big things that has happened in the quote. I don't know if there is a doctrinal movement, but that I have observed over the years, and that is a lot of people want to go back to blending sound doctrine with fundyism, and it just doesn't work, and it never will work. So those of us, again, who've been run through the fundy ringer have some appreciation for this. If you never did, well, lucky you. But if you did, you've seen a lot of horror stories, no doubt, and a lot of inappropriate activity in the name of God. So again, and we wrapped up with D, this is often propagated by men who have once embraced sound doctrine and then repudiated the truth. E, the end result of these false winds of doctrine is that believers are blown off course and suffer spiritual shipwreck, as per the Ephesians 4 passage there. That is, the challenge for every believer is to avoid, keep their ship on course, we might say. And what might appear to be a minor deviation at any given time, depending upon where you are in the course of your journey. And if you study even like, say, airlines, you might think, well, these guys, you know, they fly from, say, Dallas to Tampa, and they fly in a straight line. They're constantly making course corrections. I mean, it is a constant thing. They may be minor, but they're making them all the time. I mean, not just every second, but they're making course corrections on a regular basis. And if you don't make your course corrections, obviously what starts out, if you're only a half a degree off when you leave Dallas, where are you going to land? It won't be Tampa. That's a fact. And so depending on where you are in your journey when you take a deviation, ultimately it can have disastrous consequences. And the same is true, obviously, in the nautical realm, when you're dealing with sailing ships and all of that. If you don't stick to the channels, if you don't stick to the safe courses, you're going to end up on the rocks. So Ephesians 4, 14, here in 15, we've read verse 14. As a result, not to no longer be children, tossed here and there by waves, and carried about by every wind of doctrine. The idea here is the winds of doctrine fill the sails and move the vessel. And if the wind is not handled properly, you have to recognize, well, this is false doctrine. This isn't true. This is not what I've been taught. And compare it to the good deposit that has been entrusted to you over the years. By the trickery of men, by craftiness and deceitful scheming, but speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into the head, even Christ. And so that's the goal, of course, is to more closely become conformed to the image of Christ. And obviously we're never going to make it fully in this life, but it is a challenge that lies before us at all times. One thing you can have to say, I suppose, is the Christian life, if you're doing it right, it never gets boring, because you've always got a challenge before you of some kind. If it's not your own STA, it's the false doctrine that's out there. If it's not that, it's the demons that are operative in the world. If it's not that, you know, you got pressures in your job, pressures in your marriage, pressures in your home, all these types of things. So you've got all kinds of testing that can come your way. And again, small deviations may not seem like much at the time. Oh, it's okay if we just deviate here a little. No, small deviations can become critical and very large by the time you get to where you're supposed to be headed. So this is the value, of course, the benefit, and the necessity for staying on course. And 1 Timothy 1:18 and 20 just deals with the two believers, Hymenaeus and Alexander, that were blown off course by various winds of doctrine. And again, did they arise from within the Ephesian church? Were they there that day and heard Paul say this in Acts 20? I don't know. But again, you fight the good fight keeping faith and a good conscience, and which some have rejected and suffered shipwreck in regard to their faith. So the idea here is that it can happen to anybody, and nobody's immune to it. In my younger days, when I was more arrogant, I just thought, well, I'd like Peter, I'll be there. You can count on me, Lord, yeah. Well, guess what? You find out, you're not what you think you are sometimes. You're not all that in a bag of chips. And God has ways of humbling the arrogant. He has ways of just grinding them down. And he doesn't let up. He's relentless. He can do it 24/7. It's like, Larry the Cable Guy, I can do this all day. You can do it 24/7, and God doesn't ever tire of it. His understanding is inscrutable. He knows what his end plan for you is, and we don't even know that at a certain level, other than when he desires to conform us to the image of Christ. People have rejected certain things. And you say, well, you might be able to reject a doctrine or two here and there and make it. Maybe some minor doctrines you might get by for a while. Major doctrines you will not. There are major doctrines that if you reject, you're toast. And it won't take long for you to become toast. To reject the local church, to reject the pastor-teacher, to reject authority, to reject separation, to reject orthodox doctrines of Christianity, of Christology, rather, and soteriology. These will do you in big time and quick. There are people who have crashed and burned on many of these. Seriously, separation is the one over the years I've seen that's done more believers in probably than any other doctrine. And at a certain level, some people just begin to lose faith in doctrine. They lose faith in God, that God's going to work all this out. And I believe that's Solomon's underlying contention under Ecclesiastes, is that he knows there's a God. He believes in Jehovah, the God of Israel, although he never refers to his personal name, as we know. He only refers to Elohim. But underlying all of Ecclesiastes is the sense that in spite of the futility, God's there and he's got a plan. And we may not always see it, but it's there. And we can relax in that, knowing that, hey, God's got all this worked out. At a certain level, all I've got to do is remain loyal to the truth. And God will work the rest of it out. We live in the last days, a time when most believers will not attach themselves to or continue with sound doctrine. The prophecy given to Timothy is fulfilled in spades in our day. This is a time when people are just not interested in paying the price. It's too easy just to be a cosmic believer, essentially. Just to go out there and live like the rest of the knuckleheads out there in the world. Who don't have any real time for doctrine and who repudiate anything that doesn't suit them. Well, you can't, again, this is not a spiritual buffet. You can't pick and choose. It's a package. When you go buy something, certain things, you can go a la carte. But other things, there's no substitutions. It's a package. And that's just the way it is. It's a package deal. That's the way it is with doctrine. 2 Timothy 4, 3 and 4, for the time will come. And again, it's on us in spades here, big time. We live in a time when they will not endure sound doctrine. And over the years, I've watched people, and I felt like, that's really what they wanted. They wanted their ears tickled. They wanted me to say it the way they wanted it said. I always felt like with certain people, I was having to drag them along. That they couldn't really just get up and live the Christian life on their own. They always constantly had to be propped up. And at a certain point, that just wears you out as a pastor having to deal with that. Constantly dusting off their feelings, making sure they feel good. And if you can't live the Christian life on your own, too bad. I'm not going to live it for you. That's just the way it goes. Ultimately, at the Bema seat, I'm going to answer for one person. I'll answer for my responsibilities and all that as well. But I'm not going to answer for you, and you're not going to answer for me. And so I try to keep that before myself and recognize, because that's kind of the fundy approach. Is, oh, well, we've got to keep people happy, get them involved in programs, get them involved in all this. No, if people don't want to be involved, that's their business. If they want to remain uninvolved, too bad, let them. If they don't want to apply, that's their business. You know, there's hard work sometimes to have a local church. I recognize that. It's not always easy. It's not always fun and games. There's things you have to do, particularly living in the culture we live in. You have to deal with corporate issues if you want, you know, tax deductions and all that kind of stuff, which I assume most people do. Well, it has to be dealt with. Can't just look the other way and say, oh, well, this will take care of itself. It's got to be done. Well, one, the straight and narrow of sound doctrine begins to bore certain believers. So they seek that which entertains them, stirs their emotions, is in line with the lusts of their sin natures, or is pleasing to their ears. And again, I'm not in the business here to prop you up and help you feel better about yourself. I'm in here to get you to maturity. We're in a warfare. I'm here to teach you how to stay alive, using the drill instructor analogy, the military analogy. You watch any of these movies, the drill instructor's not there to make you feel good about yourself. And you got all these other analogies. As a shepherd, obviously I care deeply about you. Obviously, everything that happens to you affects me in some way. It's not as though I'm immune to it. And so all these analogies are used to teach, you know, the various aspects of the ministry. But again, if you can't live the Christian life on your own, that's the goal of our instruction, is love from a pure heart. You got to do that. We have a goal. We have an end in all of this, or at least a plan. And that's to get you to apply doctrine out of your own volition, because you want to, because that's what's going to be rewardable. Not that you were coerced into it or guilted into it or this or that. We will exhort you to apply and to make the sacrifices you have to make in order to maintain your integrity in the last days and continue to strive for the crown. And that's not going to be easy. There's going to be days when you just don't think you can make it. I have days like that too. Guess what? You're not immune. I'm not immune. There's times you wonder, why in the world is this going on? And you have to just faith rest it at a certain level and recognize God's got a plan, He's got a timing, and He knows what He's doing, even though I don't always. It would be nice for me if He would just check with me from time to time, but He doesn't always, and never. He does it His way, because it's His plan, and it's perfect. Two, they repudiate their right pastor and local church and opt for a plurality of teachers. Via travel, books, tapes, television, videos, the internet, etc. The internet's been one of the most dangerous things to sound doctrine, because people now have all this at their fingertips. All kinds of winds of doctrine out there that you wouldn't normally be exposed to, that people can fall into. And again, we walk a fine line, but I will warn you, it's dangerous out there. There are people who have embraced some of this junk, and it has taken them out. And we're of the opinion, our primary doctrine is that God's provided your right pastor in the right geographic area where you are. And that's where you're supposed to be. And opting, listening to other teachers, all that, unless you've got some very clear leading by the Holy Spirit. And you don't have any clear leading by the Holy Spirit to listen to somebody else. So I don't buy that, frankly. I used to try to cut believers slack and say, well, you know, maybe they'll sort it out. No, they won't. I've seen it. They crash and burn is what ends up happening. Once they start down this path of, we still are of the opinion, one believer, one pastor can get you to maturity and do right by you. You don't need 2, 3, 7, 10, how many ever people opt for. And we're not against personal study by any stretch of the imagination, but we always warn you, you better take what you're reading, what you're seeing, what you're hearing with a grain of salt. If I'm not teaching it, you run the risk of damaging yourself or becoming even worst case scenario, a casualty. So, and one of the things you can tell, you know, you look at all these ministries out there that are available. And one thing that's common among them is that they charge for their materials. And even the ones that don't, I've looked at them carefully, and you know, and I'm aware of some of them that don't, that actually adhere to the grace principle like we do. But some of them, they don't necessarily charge, but they have their little PayPal deal there on every page, so you can remember that we don't charge. Why do I need a PayPal thing there then? Because they want you to give. It's a subtle reinforcement that you need. They need money. So again, this is available out there, but unless your right pastor's teaching false doctrine or gone off the deep end spiritually and all that, you don't even have any reason to be looking anywhere else. Three, the teachers that they choose are not sound in the faith, but are often chosen based on the STA trends that appeal to the maladjusted believer. And again, they accumulate teachers in accordance to their own desires. It's their own lust grid. It's what's going to please them. And they think they know best. And as a believer, I just have to warn you, sometimes you don't know best. I may know better. Now, you have to still live your Christian life. But my opinion, I think, ought to have some weight in it. So four, the inevitable result is that these believers are adversely influenced by Operation Q-Tip. And all and people are all too prepared to buddy up to you and tell you what you want to hear. It's the person that'll tell you what you don't want to hear that actually does you some good in these cases. And so they no longer desire to remain with a sound ministry. And in the last days, you better strive for the highest form of doctrine you can get. Given that our time is shortened to opt for a lesser form or lesser degrees of soundness is not healthy. Why would anyone do that? That's a backward step. Five, they come to believe the stories and myths that these unsound teachers propagate. Things that have no value in the Christian way of life or in making the maturity adjustment. One of the myths is, I don't have to be in a local church. I can go to maturity without a local church. Wrong, wrong, wrong. That's a myth. Nice, pleasant story for the people that want to believe it, but it's not true. So again, you know, people believe all kinds of weird things, but it appeals to them. So I'm fine spiritually, even though the pastor says I'm all wet and I've repudiated what, you know, I've been taught. No, you're not fine. So again, people have various reasons and all of that, and they began to believe these kinds of things. And these are nice little stories. I listened to this one guy the other day. Well, I say the other day, it's been a few months back now, but somebody said, well, there's this ministry and it's blah, blah, blah. And so I went and looked at it and listened to the guy. I listened to him for 20 minutes and he never referred to the Bible. And this was, quote, a doctrinal ministry. He just told some nice, funny stories. Never referred to the Bible at all. Never covered any doctrine. Didn't do any teaching whatsoever. I remember when I first came down here, one of the complaints was there was a guy here, quote, ostensibly a doctrinal teacher. He was not. He was just a fraud that had been set up by somebody with a lot of money that basically paid his way. And he would come in, people would come in 10, 15 minutes late to Bible class. He'd say, oh, come on, you haven't missed anything. If you're sitting there as a believer, what are you thinking? Well, hell, why did I get here on time? I could have slept in another 10 minutes. You know, hit the snooze button one more time. Come in, you haven't missed anything? You won't hear me say that. I think I'm on safe ground with that one. You won't hear me say that. And if you're late, you can come in. We're not saying you can't come in if you're late. That's not what we're saying. But that's the kind of nonsense that goes on out there in the name of, quote, doctrine. And there's another ministry I ran across. Supposed to be big town. Everybody, this guy's great. You know, I ordered one of his books. He did send it to me free. I haven't given that. But I read his book. It was a commentary on Ecclesiastes, and it was flat out worthless. There are fundies doing better work than this guy did. He did not even address the text of certain verses. And when he did, it was only by way of application. It wasn't even the interpretation of the text. And I read part of it, and I just thought, good God, there's fundies doing better work than this. It's at least more technical. At least some of these people out there are dealing with the languages and the constructions and all of that. This guy didn't even do that. But he's sound doctrine. Great ministry. I don't think so. And much of that which passes out there as fine is not fine. And believers are all, and again, why are they saying it's fine when they didn't before? Because they've got an agenda that they didn't have before. Six, one reason people desire to be entertained is they lack the sufficient self-discipline to concentrate on sound teaching after becoming used to the stimulating cosmic entertainment found in current magazines, books, television shows, movies, etc. And there's nothing wrong with entertainment in its place. All things in their place, though. There's a time to laugh and a time to cry. I watch some movies and I cry. I watch some movies and I laugh. I watch a good one, I'll laugh and cry at the same time. Well, not at the same time, but in the same movie. And so, you know, there's times in life for all these things. But again, we are stuck in the time where we are the MTV generation. 6-second attention span, don't give them any more than that. Little bitty sound bites. And if you've listened to any of these politicians talk, all they're saying is what people want to hear. And, you know, the fact that Hillary was when 51% of the people were for the Gulf War, she was for it. Now that only 25% are for it, she's against it. Well, obviously a politician should be smart enough to figure out that you better tell the people what they want. And she obviously is. Bill Clinton in the White House with nothing to do, huh? What could possibly go wrong? I don't know. Slick Willie's just got a bad rap. Or he brought it all on himself, one or the other. So, you know, I don't know where the world's headed, but to an end... It's going downhill fast. But it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, nothing surprises me anymore, hardly. I'm still surprised occasionally. Some things will actually surprise me, but for the most part, most things don't. Well, point 9 here, the pursuit of Bible doctrine by the positive believer results in great blessings. A, the divine viewpoint of life, which identifies external false systems and philosophies as well as identifying internal deviations for the believer. So you have to judge yourself. And we recognize that the Christian life is a constant, it is an ongoing process in which you are seeking to take every thought captive. When you think something, the very second you think it, you almost have to pass judgment on it. It's not that you have to constantly do this all the time or consciously you do it, but you need to be aware of what you're thinking and why. Why am I thinking this? Where'd this come from? Is this from the sound doctrine I've been taught? When I'm being impatient or hypocritical or critical or any of these things, is this coming from doctrine or is this coming from my flesh? And you have to identify this stuff and judge yourself rightly. And when you judge yourself to have failed, you deal with it, you rebound, and you move on and you forget it. That's all you can do. There comes a certain point at which there's no point in beating yourself up over it. You failed, now move on. You can no more change the past 15 minutes ago than you can change the past last week, last month, last year. You can't even change what's happened in the last 30 seconds. It's gone. Once it's behind you, it's behind you. And that's where it needs to stay. So you rebound, you move on, recognize, hey, I'm still positive, God's for me. And but you have to judge your thoughts. And if you don't, you're going to be headed for trouble. And I can't judge your thoughts for you. You have to judge them. And when you're thinking things that are absolutely 180 degrees opposite the doctrine you've been taught, you better be asking yourself why. Why am I thinking this and what's motivating me here? 2 Corinthians 10, 4 and 5, for the weapons of our warfare. Well, verse 3 actually, for though we walk in the flesh, and we all do, we do not fight according to the flesh. See, that's the mistake some people have made. They've looked at me and thought, I just fought according to the flesh. No, I've got divine weapons that they don't see. And they've mistook meekness for weakness. They've mistook a lot of things. But as Paul said, you know, this was the problem he had with the Corinthians. Because he tried the grace approach and used the grace approach and all that. They just figured he never would lower the boom on them. And he kept warning them, I will, I will, I will. But then he came through and did it. 1 Corinthians is part of lowering that boom. I mean, he just flattened them spiritually. You read that book, and it's an expose in stupidity among these believers and what Paul thinks of it. So, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God. Those are the external things, human systems of philosophy that are empty and vain. Be it anything from hedonism to rank self-denial and legalism. The two extremes. They're both wrong. There are philosophies of life, views of life out there that are just flat wrong. And internally, we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. So you have to judge yourself. When I do this, Is this wrong? Why am I thinking this? Where did this thought come from? Who put it there? Every chance a demon can walk around whispering in your ear just like they can to anybody, I assume. So B, the proper identification of STA activity. This is the challenge, again, to judge yourself rightly. If you don't, you'll pay the price at some point. Here we specifically have the Mosaic Law in view as a part of the doctrine. What shall we say then? Is the law sinful? May it never be. On the contrary, I would not have come to recognize the sin nature except through the law. And I'd make an expanded translation there to reflect that when Paul's talking about the sin nature through here, he uses the definite article. So the problem does not reside within the law. What the law does is exposes the STA for what it is. And it's evil, and it's sinful. And we're evil and sinful sometimes, and we have to deal with that. Otherwise, if you don't deal with it, you're failing big time. I would not have come to recognize the STA except through the law, for I would not have known about coveting if the law had not said, you shall not covet. But the STA, taking opportunity through the commandment, produced in me lusting of every kind. Coveting is the same as lust, different, same word. And so, what all kinds of lust did Paul engage in? He said all of them. So think of any area of lust you can think of. And Paul experienced it. He was no better or worse in that regard than you and I are. So we recognize through doctrine, okay, what is sin and what isn't sin? And so we deal with that. We recognize through doctrine. See, victory over the indwelling STA comes through resident doctrine. This is the only way you're going to be victorious. But thanks be to God that though you were slaves of the sin nature, you became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you are committed, and having been freed from the sin nature, you became slaves of righteousness. And again, he's using a human analogy here of slavery and freedom and all that. But the point is, if you're going to be victorious in all of this, it's going to be through sound teaching. That's the only way I see to do it at this point. It's the only way I've ever seen to do it. Discernment comes as a result of the intake of doctrine. Proverbs 2, 5, and 9. And again, the danger is it's good to have discernment. We're all for discernment. But guess what? Even the most discerning person in the world can be blindsided, can be fooled. It can happen to anybody. And so, but you want to seek to minimize those occasions in your life when that happens. How do you feel when you're blindsided and run over? You feel pretty stupid, don't you? Well, guess what? Discernment is critical to this process. And this comes through the doctrine, through wisdom. If you search out wisdom as hidden treasures, you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. And again, that word fear of the Lord is not to be watered down. It means absolute fear. I mean, if you think about what God can do and the amount of power he has over your life, you ought to be afraid, rightly so. And we're not talking about a fear that just paralyzes you and all that, but we're talking about a sound, healthy respect for God and recognizing his power in your life. Also, verse 9, then you will discern righteousness and justice and equity. So you'll figure out the spiritual aspects. Again, we point out that in doctrine you have to deal with two things. You have two relationships, the vertical towards God and the horizontal with men. And with men, you have to figure out what's right and what's just and what's equitable, what's fair. See, a good judge tries to be fair. He takes all factors into account that he can. And good judges, in many cases, temper their judgment with mercy. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are times when mercy is not called for. There are times when it's time to lower the boom. There are times, and so you have to discern these things. You have to be able to figure them out. And this comes through the intake of the truth. E, divine guidance, Proverbs 3, 1 through 6. Keep all these teachings and all here. In verse 4, you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. This is if you're applying doctrine. You'll develop a reputation as somebody among believers, and even among those in your periphery as unbelievers, will have some degree of respect for you, that this is a part of it. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. That's the danger of becoming self-sufficient. I've got tons of doctrine, I'm fine now. No, you could have all the doctrine in the world and still be a jackass. It happens. I've seen it. So it's not just a matter of having the doctrine. It's actually having to apply it in the crucible of the human experience. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. You pray about stuff. You acknowledge God's power, authority, and control in your life, his right, in fact, to your life, to do with as he sees fit. You have to, at some level, relinquish control. Well, that's hard for all of us. How do you feel when you're out of control? Somebody else is running the show. It's not always a pleasant thing. But this is where faith has to come in. You have to trust God and know he's going to do right by you. Proverbs 6:22, bind these commandments around your neck, and when you walk, they will guide you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. When you awake, they will talk to you. And again, the relationship that the positive believer has through doctrine with the Lord that the negative believer just doesn't get. He doesn't get this guidance. And he doesn't see things clearly. He doesn't have the discernment. Physical health is one of the things that comes from a pursuit of sound doctrine. Psalm 107:17-20. And we're not going to take, again, you have to take all of these things. These are general guidelines, general truth. But you can't take them to extremes. Okay, therefore, anybody that pursues doctrine will never be sick. Well, it doesn't say that, does it? It doesn't promise no illness. Psalm 107:17. Fools, because of their rebellious way and because of their iniquities, were afflicted. Their soul abhorred all kinds of good food. No capacity for life. That's another thing with fools you observe in them. No capacity for life whatsoever. They go through it. They live it. But they have no capacity for it. No ability to enjoy it and to recognize that this is of God. And they drew near the gates of death. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. He saved them out of their distresses. He sent his word and healed them. He delivered them from their destructions. And this probably, as I look at it now, probably has to do with phase two deliverance. More so than actual physical health. But Proverbs 3:8 does have to do with physical health. So, but that is another whole issue. There are deliverances that are available only to the person who's pursuing the truth. Proverbs 3:8, it will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. See, a pursuit of doctrine teaches you not to be wise in your own eyes, not to be impressed with what you know. And Solomon's going to deal with that. Don't be overly righteous and don't be overly wise. Now, obviously, he's not counseling against true righteousness or true wisdom. But there's a point at which it becomes counterproductive, this meticulous pursuit of perfection. Nobody's going to get it. So why bother with it? It's a waste of your time. And even if you could get it, let's say theoretically you could. Let's say you could be perfect. Dot all your I's, cross all your T's. Everything's perfect in your life. Spiritually, you never make a blunder. Sounds nice, doesn't it? First, it's never going to happen, but let's say you did. And then there's every possibility that you could meet an untimely death anyway. And that's what Solomon bemoans. I've seen it happen to the wise as it should have happened to the wicked. So, but it's not possible. But here, healing to your body, again, refreshment to your bones. Why do some people have chronic health problems? At some level, it may be, I'm not saying it always is. Again, you can't take extremes with this. But are chronic health problems in some ways related to a maladjustment to doctrine at a certain point? It can be, according to these verses. And by the way, if you come in and you're sick next week, I'm not going to judge you. Oh, you're sick. Obviously, you're out of fellowship. That's Job's friends. Obviously, God's jamming you because you're an idiot. No. And by the way, everybody needs to be sick occasionally. If you didn't, the first germ or virus that came along would kill you. Your immune system has to be exposed to stuff in order to stay strong. Legitimate prosperity, Proverbs 3:16-18, long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are those who find her. And so, but again, this doesn't say if you pursue doctrine for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, that you're going to get it. The prosperity is still in the hand of the Lord. He determines this at a certain level. Who gets what? And you may never get yours in this life. So what? You still did the right thing. But my observation has been God blesses those that hang in there with the truth over the course of time. They may not get it immediately. But if they're patient and they wait and they don't violate their niche and do all these things that other people do, God can bless them. In her happiness, Proverbs 3:13. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. That doesn't look like the right verse, but let's try 18. Tree of life and happiness. There you go. Happy are all who take hold of her, or hold her fast. And also see 1 John 1:4. I'm going to try to wrap this up today. I don't want to continue this on Wednesday. Eye deliverance from undesirable types, Proverbs 2:12. In this case here, it is the evil woman, or rather the evil man here, the criminal element, the adulterous woman. These are the types of people that can take believers down. They'll fall into these traps. Confidence, legitimate confidence, Proverbs 3. We're not talking about arrogance. We're talking about confidence. That this produces confidence within the believer who knows that they're doing it right. You will walk in your way securely. Your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden fear nor the onslaught of the wicked when it comes, for the Lord will be your confidence. And keep your foot from being caught. Also see 2 Timothy 1:7. He has not given us a spirit of fear, as Paul says. Logistical grace, a part of living grace. Jesus said, pursue these things. Pursue the doctrines, as it were. Pursue God's word, and all these things will be added unto you. And I've never missed a meal because of God shorted me. Should have missed a couple, but that's a whole different ball game there. Seek these things, and God provides all this, as he says. 25 through 34, I don't want to read all this. But people are worried about their lives. What are they going to eat? What are they going to drink? How am I going to pay my bills? Well, guess what? God takes care of the birds. He takes care of the plants out there. Do you think he doesn't care about humans more? Seek his kingdom and his righteousness, verse 33, and all these things will be added to you. Inner peace, Psalm 119, 165. There's a certain in life, you go through testings, you go through pressures, and you go through problems, and you can either have peace in the midst of that, or you can have turmoil and distress and worry. At a certain level, you just have confidence that God's going to take care of things, and this provides peace. Those who love your law have great peace, and nothing causes them to stumble. Why? Because they're oriented to the doctrine. They recognize God's in charge. He'll take care of all this. He'll make it right. Also, Proverbs 3, 2, and 7. Modus operandi and modus vivendi. Latin terms meaning method of operation and manner of life. John the Baptist and Jesus were very opposite characters. John the Baptist was this austere, almost legalistic. He wasn't legalistic in a bad sense, but very austere, separatist type person who was very unapproachable in certain cases. And in certain way, very rough around the edges. Jesus was this night, and John eschewed company, stayed out in the wilderness as a part of his niche. That was God's will for him, and all that. And denied himself. He lived a very austere lifestyle. Jesus, on the other hand, see, John never drank wine because he was basically under a Nazarite type lifestyle. And Jesus, on the other hand, he was sociable. He went to parties. He drank. He turned water into wine. Lots of wine. Not a little wine, lots of wine, and good wine at that. And fed, multiplied bread and fish and fed people and hung out with these people, tax gatherers and sinners, the riffraff of his day. And so the Pharisees, they always, you know, they chided at all this. And Jesus said, look, wisdom is vindicated by our children, by our deeds even. Luke 7, 31 through 35 and to what shall I compare the men of this generation, and what are they like? They are like children who sit in the marketplace. And that's what we got a lot in our generation, is spiritual children. In many cases, physical children who've never grown up. And they call to one another, and they say, we played the flute for you, and you didn't dance. We sang a dirge, and you didn't weep. For John the Baptist has come eating no bread and drinking no wine, and you say he has a demon. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Yet wisdom is vindicated by our children. So these two opposite lifestyles existed at the same time on the planet, and both were well within the will of God for their lives, completely within the will of God. So you can't judge people based on their lifestyle, how much money they have. This is your method. Doctrine gives you the way to live your life and the understanding of how you're to live your life even. And so, fellowship with the Father and the Son, as we saw there, he who has my commandments and keeps them, this is the one who loves me, and I will come and have fellowship with him. We will take up our abode with him. Again, the positive believer has a certain level of fellowship with God that the other believers don't have. Let me say the positive applying believer does. A personal and national security, Psalm 16, 7 through 9. This is one of the issues. What makes a nation safe? Is it strong military? Wrong. God makes a nation safe. You can have the best military in the world. Jericho was an impenetrable fortress. Set at the top of a hill, it was unconquerable from all the human aspects of looking at the situation. And yet, so how did God conquer it? Well, I want you to march around the city and blow trumpets. That sounds like a dumb approach to warfare. I mean, really. How are you going to conquer this city? We're going to march around 7 days, and then on the seventh day, we're going to blow these trumpets. And then the walls all fell down. The city was conquered by God. It wasn't conquered by human military effort. Psalm 16, 7 through 9. I will bless the Lord who has counseled me. Indeed, in my mind instructs me in the night. I have set the Lord continually before me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my glory rejoices. My flesh will dwell securely. And see Deuteronomy, the lengthy section there, but he basically says to 28, 1 and 7, that if you obey me, these blessings will follow you. And you'll be secure among the nations. And if you don't, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, I will take you down. And I will disperse you among the nations, and you will be the last of them. And the Jews have lived to see this fulfilled. P, true capacity for life, Job 1:22. Job was a righteous man, as it says. And even in the most difficult tests of life, losing your children, all of them, the same day. And all of that, you talk about some severe reversals, Job faced them. All these things happen. But 1:22, through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. And what's our first response when we're confronted with these types of tests? It's God's fault. Can't be mine. I didn't bring this on myself. God's doing it. I got issues with you, God. Well, capacity for life says, hey, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In the day of prosperity, be happy. But in the day of adversity, consider that the Lord has made one just as well as he made the other. And how are you going to have capacity for life if you never have adversity? You'd never have capacity for the good things you have. Sometimes adversity is the best thing in the world for us. And we always get up every day and pray for that, don't we? Send me the adversity I need. No, bless me, Lord. Of course, but we have to recognize it has its place. 2, 9, and 10. His wife said, do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God and not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. He had capacity for this. Now, he cracked under the test. I understand that. He, under the physical aspects of this test and all of that, he finally cracks. I get it. I would have probably cracked way before him. But God didn't put that test on me. He put it on Job. So Q, eternal rewards. Obviously, deliverance from loss at the Bema Seat. We've looked at the 1 Corinthians passage. That's the building metaphor. Colossians 1, 3 through 5. Let's read that one. That'll be our last one. And then 1 Timothy also 4:16, where he says, you will be a source of deliverance both for yourself and those that hear you. And that obviously isn't just those that hear you. It's those that listen to you and take the teaching to heart. If they don't do that, obviously you're not going to be any deliverance to them. We give thanks to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, praying always for you. Since we heard of your faith in Jesus Christ and the love which you have all for all the saints, we give thanks for you because of the hope laid up for you in heaven, of which you previously heard in the word of truth. And they heard about the doctrine of SG3 in their initial exposures with Paul. And they believed those doctrines and began to lay up eternal rewards as they applied. And again, the Psalm 138:2, you have magnified your word at least according to all your name, if not above all your name. Depending upon how one translates that preposition there. But certainly God's name, his reputation, and his word are very much intertwined. One depends on the other. at that level. Okay, so we did get through that. We need to stop here and get everything in place for our observance of the Lord's table.